Welcome to the Eye Candy Duo podcast with me, Naomi Williams, a 30-something parent of none, baffled by how much is undiscussed in the world of pregnancy and parenthood. I'll be asking the questions you want the answers to on this podcast, which is brought to you by Eye Candy World, makers of beautifully British pushchairs for parents across the globe. This week, we are joined on the Eye Candy Duo podcast by Tracy Green, a speech and language therapist who specialises in stammering. With studies now being published on the impact COVID-19 and resultant lockdowns have had on children's language skills, we wanted to reach out to Tracy to find out the best ways parents and carers can nurture and develop their child's speech and language. Hello, Tracy, and welcome to the Eye Candy Duo podcast. It's a pleasure to have you on today.
Hi, thank you for having me.
How are you? Are you well today?
Yes, yep, very well, thank you.
Fantastic.
Thank you very much.
For any of our listeners, they probably just heard the intro and kind of recognise maybe stammering as one thing and then there's speech and language. I mean, can you tell us a little bit about what a speech and language therapist does and who does necessarily go to a speech and language therapist? You know, who would you work with and how?
Yeah, sure. So as you said, it's speech and language, and I think understanding what speech and language is actually quite useful to understand from the differences between them, and then understand who a speech and language therapist works with. So when we say speech, it's usually the way that how things are said, so the sound system, etc. And then language is what's said and what we understand when something's been said and how it's heard. And then communication is how the information is given with verbally, with or non-verbally, with non-verbal skills and the intent behind it. So there's quite a lot involved in just what people think is a speech. And so a speech and language therapist will work with an absolute range of people, from children to adults. And that will include people that have had speech and language delay or disorders from childhood, communication difficulties such as autism, hearing impairment and deafness, brain injury and stammering, neurological or just disorders such as Parkinson's. And we're working individually, one-to-one with clients or in groups. And we also work in an absolute range of places, such as special schools, mainstream schools, hospitals, care homes. The justice system actually has a lot of workings now with speech and language therapists as well. Health centres and then people's private homes as well.
Wow, so it actually it really covers such a wide range. So just to say, just to pull out speech in itself, there's like a huge range, a cacophony of different elements to it, like you said, about language and communications. And I think what's been so kind of interesting, especially with, like we mentioned, like about lockdowns and obviously children not being able to go to school and maybe be able to interact with peers, is that the subsequent multiple news stories, that have come to light from this, detailing like the sort of growing evidence that the lockdowns over the last year have had an impact on young children's language skills. I mean, for any parent that's listening, today, who may be mindful about this, I mean, what are the most important things would you advise to be doing at home, especially as, we're in the summer holidays at the moment, in terms of continuing to develop language skills?
Yeah, well, I mean, it kind of feels like, we've got to have all this equipment, it's all got to be very technical to be able to help your child. But actually, there's just so many language, speech and language opportunities around us in everyday life. And things like bath time, cooking, laying the table, going for a walk, looking at books, you're building vocabulary all the time. And whenever you're with your child, taking those opportunities to talk about what you're doing is really really useful. It's what we call bathing your child in language. So lots of repetition of different words, such as, for example, if you're bathing a child and you're washing their face, so mummy's washing your face. You've got lots of water on your face. Well, let's splash your face now, so that the word face is being heard lots of times in lots of different sorts of situations. And I think keeping language simple, not too complex, and not feeling too rushed, so that the child has opportunities to respond as well.
Because that's actually very fascinating. I mean, from my own personal experience, actually, my brother, who's an actor, his daughter used to sit when I was a baby listening to him practicing lines for scripts. So probably repetition. But like you say, actually, I think it's the complexity of language, and that arc and association probably really does start building a foundation there. I mean, with, you know, especially at the moment, you know, with the parents across the whole of the UK that are still working from home, how important is sort of adult to adult language and communication? I mean, are there sort of characteristics of adult speech which impact children's language development?
Yes, I think the thing is that while obviously, as we say, it's really important to talk with your children and talk around the subjects and encourage conversation, it's keeping the language at their level, obviously dependent on their ages, but keeping the language at the child's level, not too complex. That doesn't mean you have to have baby speech. It just means sticking to the key words. So if you're asking a child to do something or talking about something, rather than kind of enveloping it in lots and lots of words, you can actually just use the key words. For example, if you said, can you go into the garden and get your teddy, please? I remember that I saw it under the chair in the garden. That's quite a long, complex sentence, whereas you could say, please get your teddy, it's in the garden, under the chair. So there's a lot less for the child to understand, to comprehend and to remember. So it's keeping language simple and to the point.
Yeah, because actually those two examples, yeah, for an adult, sort of hearing that, you think, oh, the first one's quite clear, but actually when you simplify it, it's got really nice structure and kind of, you know, action points to what you said. That's fascinating. So Tracy, as a specialist in stammering, for any of our listeners who aren't sure, can you explain what stammering is? Are there any particular sort of features, and is it caused by anything in particular?
Yes, so you may have actually heard it called stammering or stuttering. And just to let you know that they actually mean exactly the same thing. Stammering is what we use in Britain and stuttering is in America. So they're exactly the same. They mean exactly the same thing. Stammering is when words get stuck or repeated, either fully or part of the word gets repeated. It can involve elongation of sounds or blocking with extra tension and facial expressions or even noises trying to get the words out. The cause of it's complex, and recent research has shown that there are definitely neurological factors and genetic factors underlying the cause of stammering. But things like environment, language and other things do influence its development and the severity and impact on each individual person. But what we absolutely know is that parents do not cause stammering. There's nothing they've done that has caused their child to stammer. However, if a child does stammer, changing certain things in the child's environment, in their communication environment, should I say, can help a great deal. And I'll be giving you lots of tips and examples later on. The decision as to whether someone would want help with this is dependent on how it affects them on the inside, their thoughts and their feelings, and how it affects their behaviour and their willingness to speak. So if someone's being the best confident and competent communicator that they can be and stammering, they may decide that they don't want speech and language therapy. Because the main aim of therapy is to help a child or an adult to be the best communicator that they can be with confidence, even if they are stammering. However, if they're frustrated and they're avoiding saying things, and they want situations, and they're avoiding saying things or situations that they're avoiding, or that parents are getting anxious about it, then that's an indication that they may need support and therapy.
Because would you say that's, by the way, I found that so fascinating, from the difference between stammering and stuttering right through, because, you know, it is very much like you say, about a personal choice if they feel like they want to seek sort of specialist surrounding that. Because do you think there is a stigma that surrounds stammering as it stands?
Yes, absolutely. Things are changing. That's kind of one of the most important things that we're trying to change, is the stigma surrounding stammering. One of the things that we're trying to change is the thought that people think that people that stammer are nervous, anxious people, and that's not the case. Confident, outgoing people stammer. Unfortunately, due to bad experiences, some young people may have had bad experiences as a result of their stammering, and then going forward, they'd be maybe more nervous to speak in certain situations. But it's not because they were nervous that they've got the stammer. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. That completely makes sense. And it's a very sad thought, actually, that obviously because of maybe certain stigmas, or think people potentially thinking they're helping by, you know, what we were mentioning earlier, like, oh, take a deep breath, all this kind of stuff. It just adds more sort of pressure and stress to a situation that then, you know, probably kind of makes that person feel less inclined to speak when they want to, or express themselves. Yes. I mean, would you say that, you know, I mean, given the kind of, it's great actually that we're getting more news articles about this, and people are really kind of focusing in a way positively about, you know, look, we need to look at, you know, children's speech and language development, especially after lockdowns. Would you say there's an awareness of stammering is actually now growing, and that there is a greater understanding coming from this?
Yeah, absolutely. There's lots going on in the world of stammering. And one of the most exciting things is that well-known and famous people are talking about their stammers more and working towards changing the stigma of people that stammer. And the most exciting thing is that Joe Biden becoming the new president of the United States is a fine example of letting parents of children who stammer and people who stammer know that there are absolutely no limitations to what you can achieve in spite of having a stammer. So, you know, that's absolutely fantastic. And we're very much trying to change the language surrounding stammering. So when we're working with people, with children and parents, rather than saying, well, he had a really bad stammer today, he was stammering, his stammer was really bad today, we kind of changed the language surrounding it to, oh, he stammered a lot today, or he stammered less today. So the negative connotation revolving around stammering is something we're working with as well.
You know, when you're talking to someone who stammers, are there certain things to try to do or not do? Would you advise?
I think the most important thing is to give someone who stammers time. Giving them time is absolutely paramount. Not to finish their words, not to tell them to slow down, take a deep breath, and try and be appropriate with your eye contact. And I think that's because eye contact, we always often talk about eye contact, you should keep eye contact, but there's appropriate eye contact, isn't there? Because you do tend to look at someone, then move away a little bit, look again. It's not kind of constant piercing.
Yeah,
piercing through
eye contact. Yeah, because I could totally appreciate that. Actually, yeah, there are levels of appropriate staring.
Yeah.
Before it becomes a stare, because also that can make you feel very intimidated. And if also, absolutely, again, if you feel that there's a time pressure, then that probably doesn't help the situation.
Yeah, and I think it's important that, you know, if somebody does bring it up, does mention, which people are being encouraged more nowadays to talk about things and disclose more. But if they do talk about their stammer, to, you know, ask them, what do they find more comfortable or less comfortable? What would they like you to do to help them?
And I mean, just going back onto, obviously, it's speech and language development, and children, obviously, is such an important time for them, and Is there, I mean, but is there a particular sort of age or stage when you may start to see stammering develop in a child?
Yeah, well, usually between the ages of 2 and 5, as language is developing at quite a fast rate, as you probably aware, as you said, with your brother's child, children do, they repeat words and phrases and a lot of ums and ahs. And actually, it was 5%, but actually now the new records show that research shows that 8% of children, that's 1 in 12, do stammer between the ages of 2 and 5. And then 1% of those children go on to stammer into adult life. So between about 4 and 7% don't stammer once they go into adult life. And it's when they're younger, it's usually equal between boys and girls. But then as it goes into adult life, it's usually 4 times as many boys and girls stammer into adult life.
That's fascinating that it's, you know, that actually it's quite a regular, not, I don't know if the word regular, but definitely between the ages of 2 and 5, you know, it's a developmental stage. You can sort of see that you might, you know, start seeing or hearing sort of elements of stammering, but actually the stats after that actually really are quite a big difference, actually. I mean, is there anything that sort of key things that a parent should do if they think their child has a stammer? So potentially is over maybe at 5 or maybe just getting a little bit older. I mean, are there definitive sort of tips that are useful for parents to know?
Well, yeah, actually, I'd say between the ages of 2 and 5, not necessarily after they're 5 only. I'd say even when it's, because we often don't know if it is going to be a stammer that's going to carry on, or if it is something that's developmental and is going to not carry on. So we give the ideas of, because there's a lot that you can do during that time that's very useful to help the child's environment. So lots of the tips are, so for example, as I said, I think earlier, is not to say take a deep breath and slow down, because actually taking a deep breath can actually increase the tension. So increase the tension of the articulators and then the airflow. So if you kind of imagine suddenly taking a deep breath before you talk, actually everything tenses up, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's actually, I was just thinking that. It's like, my God, that is actually sometimes the worst thing to do. Yeah. So actually, yeah.
And we've all done it. We've all thought that's the best thing to say to each other. So it's not terrible if you've done it. It's not a disaster if you have done it. But just going forward, actually, it's not as useful as we think it is. It's actually better off you use yourself an unhurried rate of talking when you're talking to your child, so that they feel unhurried and they kind of, you're modelling for them, and also giving lots of pausing when you're speaking, so that they. Again, this whole unhurried, this time, giving time is really important. There's also another important thing that's very useful is when, again, we've all done it, when we pick our children up from school and as they get in the car or as we're walking along, it's, you know, asking them so many questions, bombarding them with so many questions, because we're so excited to see them. And we want to know, you know, what did you have for lunch? Who did you play with? What did you eat? What did you do today? And just bearing in mind, actually, giving them these constant bombardment of questions and they're having to think all the time. And this is at the stage when their articulators, their speech learning, their language learning is all very, quite a difficult situation anyway. And then we're bombarding them with loads of questions. So a useful thing to do is actually offer them to comment on what they've done, so that you're not actually directly asking a question, but you can say, oh, it looks like you had a really busy day today. Or you could even talk about your day. I had a really busy day today. And then let them offer some information if, as and when it's time for them and they're feeling comfortable to say something.
I mean, I have to be honest, I want to be spoken to like that, actually, sometimes. It's interesting, actually, even as adults, you know, sometimes if you have had a very busy or hard day, and then you get a list of questions thrown at you, actually sometimes your mind is almost like going, I can't quite compute this. You put that within, you know, a 2-5-year-old, how on earth are they going to kind of, you know, pick through all of that and, you know, and think of the words to reply with?
Absolutely. And I think there's also, I mean, there's full listening, so that when you're listening to your child, listen to what they're saying rather than how they're saying it, so they're absolutely aware that, again, they're not having to rush it because you are listening to what they're saying. And also, if you're rushed, tell them you're rushed. Tell them you haven't got time at the moment yet to hear what they want. You really want to hear what they're going to say to you. But I haven't quite finished what I'm doing at the moment, but I really want to hear what you've got to say. Let me finish what I'm doing, and then I'm going to listen to what you've got to say, and I've got all the time to listen to you. So rather than always, which I think, again, you know, we're all guilty of, we all say, oh, yeah, I'm listening, and you're not really listening. So, and don't be afraid to tell them that you're not ready yet. And when you are ready, you really want to hear what they've got to say, so they've got the time. Mm. And another useful tip is their turn taking. So in the family, when we have opportunities to sit down around the table or just having conversations, that we take it in turns. Everybody gets their turn. And that doesn't mean that the child that stammers gets more time and more turns than anyone else. And everybody gets their turns, and everybody feels that they've got time to say what they want to say. And constant confidence building, so praising things other than speech, talking about other things, that rather than always, you know, centering on, or that was, you said that well, or that was fluent, actually talking about other things that they do well, talking about things that they're, you know, that they coloured, they noticed that they were colouring that in well, or that they jumped really high, or, you know, just confidence building, basically. And a final thing is special time, if possible. I know everybody is so busy, but special time, 5 minutes every few days for each child in the house is just wonderful. Not screen time, just opportunities for one-to-one with your child. And it doesn't have to be talking. It doesn't have to be speaking. It just literally can be playing a game, playing a board game, or just it can be talking about what the child wants to talk about. But often letting them choose the activity.
And I suppose, especially with parents still working from home, and some might, you know, remain working from home, that's really good touch points. You know, if you are kind of still in the same house as your child, and obviously that can get very overwhelming, just to kind of try and, you know, key out that time specifically where you're away from any stresses as a parent and away from work, and you can actually clear your mind even just for 5 minutes, like you suggest. I mean, for a parent that's, you know, kind of going, brilliant, I'm going to take some of these on board and really kind of just put some of these things in practice, would you suggest that there's a particular stage where they should potentially seek a referral to sort of a speech and language therapist like yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we always say that if you are worried, or if your child is worried, so even if, as I said, you know, very often this can happen between the ages 2 and 5, but if you are worried that it's something that's not going away, or it's just bothering you, then absolutely contact either the local speech and language therapist through the NHS or a specialist speech and language therapist through what's called ASLTIP, which is the Association of Speech and Language Therapists in Independent Practice. And also you can access the Michael Palin Centre website or the Stammer website, which was the British Stammering Association. It's now called Stammer, which is STAMMA. And they've got lots of videos and tips and support groups. So even if your child hasn't been referred yet, there's lots of kind of ideas and tips to look back on as well while you're waiting perhaps for a referral to come through a speech and language therapist.
And I'm sure vital kind of touch points, like you say, if there is any sort of a parent's kind of got this on their mind at the moment and they just maybe want to just reach out and just garner some extra resource or extra information, That's some excellent advice. And maybe actually at the end, we can kind of maybe touch on that if there's any other kind of sites or places of recommendations that you'd point towards parents at that stage. And likewise, we'll pop these links and any sort of additional information into the show notes too. I mean, obviously, when we're sort of talking about kids and, you know, stammering and, you know, working on ways to make their environment more comfortable for them so they can really sort of grow and see how that develops for them. I mean, I guess a knock-on for that could also be the world of behaviour and emotion, which, I mean, obviously is a very tricky place for a child to navigate at the best of times. But can this be, I imagine this can be prove very challenging area for a child who may not be able to kind of verbalize their feelings fully. I mean, is there any kind of advice and tips you would give to parents of children who are struggling to express their emotions through language?
Yeah, I mean, we always recommend that parents talk and label their own emotions. So not to be afraid to say, oh, I'm so excited we're going to the park. Or again, also not to be afraid to comment on negative emotions like, oh, I really do get cross when this happens, or I get very irritated sitting in this traffic. So I think it's helping the child to build their own emotional literacy to steer towards their feelings. And it's okay to have big feelings. We all get emotional, and if mummy does, it must be okay. So it's quite nice for them to hear this. I mean, using, as we've said, non-verbal communication skills such as facial expressions and even our hands, gestures. So, you know, really using your facial expressions if you're feeling unhappy, that they can see, or feeling happy, so that it links, that it's very obvious that that's what you're feeling.
And I mean, just to kind of then to lastly finish off, Tracy, I mean, is there any other sort of particular resources or anything you'd recommend for parents that are listening on today's podcast that you'd recommend as kind of support literature to help children's speech and language development as a whole?
Yeah, sure. So Laura Mize is Teach Me to Talk. She's got some great podcasts and YouTube videos, and also on Instagram there's Amy Graham, Carrie Ebert and Jenny Bjorn. So they've all got some great ideas and opportunities to encourage speech and language. But as I said, it's all around us anyway. But these kind of podcasts and YouTube videos kind of help you put it into practice and give you exciting ideas, perhaps especially during the holidays.
Yeah, oh, fantastic. No, that sounds fantastic, and we'll make sure we link everything like that into the actual podcast show notes and also alongside our blog as well, because I'm sure so many people will find that enormously useful, and like you say, during summer holidays where, you know, everybody's at home with their kids at the moment, so they'll be probably really good things to have a bit of fun and play with. Tracy, thank you so much for coming on. I find this area utterly fascinating, and the fact that, I mean, we've kind of scratched the surface of it.
Yeah,
it's such a broad subject, and I think it is just truly, truly fascinating. And obviously, you know, we're talking about kids between the age of 2 and 5, and they're navigating all of this whole spectrum of speech, language and communications, and they're just sort of learning that and imparting it, I suppose, from their direct environment. So it's an incredible area to take on board. And likewise, you know, if our listeners have any specific questions, I'd love an excuse to drag Tracy back onto the podcast.
pleasure. As you said, it literally is scratching the surface. It's hard to fit everything into this amount of time, but yeah, with pleasure.
Fantastic.
If anybody has any specific things to ask.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I say, I don't need really any excuse to get you back on, Tracy. I could listen to you all day. but likewise, it would be lovely to have some feedback from our listeners just to see if, you know, if there's anything specific they're actually going through at the moment. And like to kind of pose any questions, but likewise, we'll pop all of the links and information so they've got something directly straight after the podcast to kind of dive straight into. But Tracy, thank you so much again. It's been an utter pleasure, and thank you. We'll speak to you soon.
Pleasure. Thank you. Bye. Bye-bye.
To find out more information about the topics covered in today's podcast, head to the iCandy blog page on www.icandyworld.com/blog. You can also catch up on season one, featuring thought-provoking and engaging interviews from a mix of industry leaders, experts, celebrity parents, and healthcare specialists, all via your preferred podcast provider. If you enjoyed today's episode, then don't forget to leave a review and hit like and subscribe to ensure you never miss an episode. iCandy is a proud supporter of Great Ormond Street Children's Hospital charity. Every day brings new challenges at GOSH, and this extraordinary hospital depends on charitable support to give seriously ill children the best chance to fulfil their potential. A donation from as little as £10 could pay for a genetic test that will help diagnose sick children, whilst only £50 could cover the cost of one night stay for parents in GOSH's family accommodation. Every little bit helps support both children and parents alike in making a challenging time as comfortable as possible. If you would like to make a donation, please head to discover.icandyworld.com/gosh.